Good afternoon. Welcome to Focus on the Foothills. Coming up, we're going to be talking with some folks about rabies. But to start off the program today, talking about a different subject entirely, Wilkes Habitat for Humanity. Isaac Kearns, the executive director of Wilkes Habitat for Humanity, has stopped by to talk to us about what's going on here in Wilkes. Now, Isaac, Wilkes Habitat for Humanity, or just Habitat for Humanity, do people have some misconceptions of what this is? Or maybe I should just say, tell me what this is and then address any misconceptions.
Sure. One of the big things we like folks to know is you'll notice wherever you go around the country, you'll see another name with that Habitat for Humanity. In our case, it's Wilkes Habitat for Humanity. And the reason for that is we're set up as a really big family of independent local nonprofits that operate the Habitat for Humanity ministry. So one of the great things about us is that we're 100% local, even though we're operating part of this big international program. And so we've got a local board of directors. We raise all of our money right here in Wilkes, and we serve homebuyers in need of affordable shelter right here in Wilkes. So we're a great local nonprofit, even though we're part of that great big old name that a lot of folks have heard. What we do is we build and sell houses at 0% interest and at the exact cost it takes to build them to local folks who are in need of affordable shelter. Here in Wilkes, we've got a really big need for that. You know, rent prices are pretty high. There's a low availability of rental homes even. We've got a lot of hardworking families out there that just are looking for an opportunity. And we've got a lot of folks here that are ready for home ownership but can't necessarily afford that bank loan with the interest built in.
Right.
Or the profit built into the cost of a new home especially. And so Habitat's a great way for folks in those kind of situations to say, hey, I'm ready for home ownership, can't quite afford that loan, let's go talk to Habitat, get that 0% interest deal. What we ask for in exchange for that great deal is a lot of service to the program. We call that sweat equity. So the things it takes to qualify is basically to have a need for affordable housing. That can be any kind of need for housing, whether it's high rent, high repair costs, all kinds of things. There has to be the ability to pay for that 0% interest mortgage plus the long-term maintenance of the home.
Right.
And then we're also looking for folks that are willing to partner with Habitat. And that, like I mentioned, was the sweat equity. We've got homebuyer education classes. So we want to make sure folks are well prepared for all of the things that are coming down the line, including those maintenance costs and everything else that comes with owning a home. Folks who own a home that are listening know that along with the joys of home ownership comes a great deal of sometimes stressful situations.
Yes.
And we want to make sure our buyers are fully prepared for those. So we do a lot of educational work beforehand. And then we also require 250 hours of sweat equity for everyone on the loan. So, you know, if it's a husband and wife, both of those folks would each contribute 250 hours. If it's a single-parent household, it'd be just the 250 for that person.
And before we went on the air, you said a lot of people think that this is just a way to get a free house, and that's not how it works.
Not at all. All of our folks do have to pay that mortgage every month. And what the best part of Habitat is, though, that mortgage payment's not just another annoying bill every month. The way we're set up, that goes back into the home building fund every year. So our buyers that have already gone out and bought homes here in Wilkes are now funding that chance at the American dream for the folks that are coming through right now. And so we really look at our partnership goes on and on long past the time we sell that home.
Now, you mentioned something before we went on the air about home buyer program and that you could set a record this year. Is that right?
We could. Wilkes Habitat has been serving on average about 1 to 2 home buyers per year. And thanks to the amazing support we've gotten in this community over the recent years, we've got funds in place to build 3 houses at once. It'll be the first time we've done that. We could possibly do 4. We just need to find the home buyers to be purchasing those homes. We're also going to be building in the town of Wilkesboro, close in behind Tyson, will be the next set of homes. So we've been building out in the community in different places. It's been a while since we've been more centralized in Wilkes. Most of the folks in Habitat's income range happen to live kind of in the Central Wilkes School District and that general region. So we think there's a lot of folks out there that would qualify and be interested. We're just trying to reach them.
Well, now, what is the best way for folks to reach you? Does Wilkes Habitat have a website, phone number, a physical location? What is the best way for folks who are listening to say, okay, I'm interested in this, what do I need to do, and who do I call?
We sure do. There's lots of ways to get in touch. One of the easiest ways is to pick up a copy of our part 1 of the application. We've made it really simple. It's just a 1-page document Folks, just fill that out. It's got all the information. Just submit it back with proof of income documents. That can be picked up at our Habitat Restore location, which is located very close here to 3WC over on 320 Cothran Street. We also do have a website, which is wilkshabitat.org. The application can be downloaded directly off of the website. And if folks want to get in touch, give us a call at 336-838-3044, extension 2.
Now, Isaac, again, they can get information from the website, I'm sure, if they stop by the Restore. I'm sure there's folks they can talk to there. But again, just to reiterate before we run out of time, the Wilkes Habitat, this is all self-contained here in Wilkes. You are a part of the, under the big umbrella of Habitat.
That's right.
But the Wilkes Habitat is in Wilkes. You fundraise in Wilkes. You build houses in Wilkes. You help people in Wilkes. This is a Wilkes thing, right?
It is absolutely a Wilkes County nonprofit, 100% local.
All right. And again, you're wanting to partner with families.
We are.
To help them get a home. This is just not a freebie or a handout. You do some sweat equity, as you say, to get that home.
That's right. And it's partner families and individuals, a household of any size from one and up.
And if folks want to just donate to help with Habitat, how do they go about doing that?
There's lots of ways to donate. They can drop off funds directly at our Restore location where our offices are also located. They can donate online at our website. And also another great way if folks don't have funds to donate is to donate items to our Habitat Restore: furniture, appliances, building materials, books and household items, all kinds of things like that. We sell those at the Restore and that funds all of our operational overhead.
Again, the website is
wilkshabitat.org.
And the phone number?
336-838-3044, extension 2.
If you're needing a home and have not been able to afford it and you can meet these qualifications, what an awesome opportunity this is. Isaac, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Isaac Kearns with Wilkes Habitat for Humanity. We'll have more with Focus on the Foothills coming up.
Go east, my friend. Go to Southeastern Cars and Parts of Rhonda. Rudy Holbrook and the staff at Southeastern have all kinds of used vehicles, and they provide on-the-lot financing. Southeastern has car parts. Call today about the part you need, 835-4442. Southeastern has a 24-hour wrecker service, 835-4442. Nights and holidays, 957-7774. When you need a good used car, truck, or SUV, when you need car parts, go east, my friend. Go to Southeastern Cars and Parts, Highway 268 East, Rhonda. Some homemade chips, stromboli, wings, chicken and veggie plate, or salad sounds delicious. Mazzini's has pasta, pizza, wings, beef tips, salads, sandwiches, and appetizers. Enjoy weekly specials and daily specials. Any day, anytime, get a large pizza with one topping and 25 wings, only $27. Large specialty pizza and 25 wings, only $30. Wednesday evening, senior citizens get a discount. Open Monday through Saturday, 11 till 9, Sunday, 11 till 4. It sounds delicious. Mazzini's Italian Family Restaurant, North Bridge Street, Elkin.
Good afternoon and welcome to Focus on the Foothills. My name is Angela. My guest today, I have with me in the studio a couple of folks from the Animal Control. I have Junior Simmons, and from the Health Department, I have Diane Balgus. And thanks to both of you for being with us on the program today. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Angela. It's good to be here.
All right. Now, something that we may or may not like to talk about or think about, but it's certainly one of these things that you can't hide your head in the sand over, is rabies. And, Junior, I think you just came through in the month of May doing some rabies clinics for folks for getting dogs and cats vaccinated. How important is it to stay up to date on vaccines for your pets, for your dogs and cats?
Very important. That's your only protection for your animals as well as for your family. They have, you know, two shots that they give the animal. One is a one-year vaccine. That's what your animal would receive when he first goes in. Every shot that he would receive thereafter would be a three-year vaccine. So the immune system would be good for 3 years after that second shot.
When do you start getting vaccines? So you have a dog that has puppies. When do you start getting those puppies vaccinated?
That would be the earliest time that they can have their vaccine would be 4 months of age.
Is that the same for cats?
Yes, that would be the same for cats. If they have it any earlier than the 4 months, the antibodies that's in the mother's milk would actually attack the shot, so the shot has a lot less likelihood of being effective.
All right, so it's very important. Then, Junior, do some people think, well, because I don't live out in the country, I live in town, it's okay if I don't have my dog or cat vaccinated. Is that true or false?
Very false. We have rabies from one end of this county to the other, as well as in the city limits of Wilkesboro, North Wilkesboro. I don't think any community is exempt in the last 20 years.
Now, what? How many cases of rabies have we had thus far this year?
This year we've had 5 positive so far. We've had 1 dog, 2 skunks, 1 fox, and a raccoon. Last year we had a total of 8, so this year it seems to be a little bit on the increase. The thing that alarms me most is in the last 2 to 3 years we're seeing a lot more domestic animals, a lot more dogs and cats being exposed because we've had wildlife that's had this rabies virus in it for the last 20 years. So you're starting to see a crossover on those animals that's not current on a rabies vaccine.
So when you get the vaccine, you need to do this on a regular basis. Just getting your dog or cat vaccinated one time, that's not going to last them for years and years and years.
That's correct. They should receive their first vaccine at 4 months of age, and then a year later you would take them in to be inoculated again. They would receive their second vaccine. That second one would be good for 3 years. Most all of your veterinarian offices now are sending out reminder cards to let you know, please get them in here and get them vaccinated. Plus, we have the rabies vaccination clinics that's advertised here as well as in the newspaper and other places once a year to help jog people's memory. You know, please get those pets vaccinated.
Diane, if I could, I want to ask you this before we get into some other stuff. In case people are thinking, well, rabies is kind of like having the flu or something. Rabies is a very serious virus.
It is very serious. The issue with rabies, especially as it affects humans, is you don't see that many cases, fortunately. The reason that you don't see cases is because we stress to people to try to get your animals vaccinated to reduce the rate of exposure. But with rabies, it's a virus that affects the neurological system, it affects your brain, and what happens, unfortunately, is when someone one time is exposed and becomes symptomatic, it's death within 10 days. And we've had reports of a death in South Carolina. There was a death in Missouri in 2014 where humans were exposed to rabies, did not get prophylaxis, did not get treatment after the exposure, probably did not realize at the time that they were exposed because the exposure was tracked back to bats, but it did result in their deaths.
So, we were talking a few minutes ago before we went on the air, and you said, some people have said to you, well, if I start showing symptoms, then I'll do something. At that point, it's too late?
It's too late. And that's one of the reasons why that we stress to people who may have had an exposure that you need to get the rabies treatments or the rabies treatments to prevent it. And the treatment consists of, I grew up hearing horror stories about people who had been exposed and they had to go get all these shots in their stomach and, you know, how painful it was and everything.
Right.
That's changed. But the treatment now consists of, with the initial treatment on the first day that you get treated, you get immune globulin, which is a blood product that gives you an immediate response, immediate protection from the virus. And then you get your first booster. Now, unfortunately, the immune globulin is given based upon your weight. So, people always know, or they want to know, how many shots do I have to get? Well, it depends with immune globulin. You can get just a few or you can get a lot. And then you go into getting the vaccination, the actual rabies vaccination for humans. And you get one, and then on day 3, you get the second one. And then on day 7, day 14, you get another one. So it's 4 rabies vaccinations and then the immune globulin that you have to get to complete the post-exposure treatments.
But this is something that you need to do ASAP and not wait about.
You do, because the recommendation from the state is that after your exposure, we need to know within 48 hours of whether or not the animal that you've been exposed to is going to be quarantined and observed. And if that is ruled out, or if that animal has been tested and tested positive for rabies, then treatments should start within 48 hours. So you either need to have the animal and be tested or be watching it, or you need to start treatments.
Junior, when people see, we talked about domesticated animals a few minutes ago, when people are outside and they see other animals, I think it was, 2 or 3 years ago, there was a kitten on the Greenway, or maybe that was just last year, I don't remember now, that so many people were exposed to. It turns out this kitten had rabies, but everybody just wanted to stop and pet this kitten. You want to be good to animals, but whether it's a kitten or a stray puppy or it's a raccoon or something else, what do we need to know? What do we need to look for?
On your stray animals, it's really best not to handle them at all. It's best to call our office and let us pick those up. You know, we can have the animals. We can check the animals. You're going to give them your rabies shots. You know, you're going to look for things that to make you aware of, has he been exposed to any rabies or not. Problem number one is you don't know if this animal's been vaccinated, if he's, currently on a shot, or if he's just a stray. And a wild animal sometimes become tame. You could have a raccoon that would actually come up to you to be friendly to you. And as you reach down to pet him, all of a sudden he's aggressive. Same thing happens with the cats. Cats have the furious type of rabies they talk about 80% of the time. Dogs don't always get the furious time. Everybody talks about Cujo and what they saw on TV.
Right.
Doesn't always turn out that way. You can't always notice it by looking. The same with the kitten that was on the greenway. That kitten had exposure to several people. Domestic animal really worries me if you're in a subdivision or anything of that nature. You're talking about dogs or cats. You've got a lot of those animals that may, I call them community dogs. They do belong to one house, but they're very friendly. They're small dogs. They run with the kids all day. So you can have one animal that exposes 50 different households. And you talk about a lot of work for me and for Diane. That goes on for weeks sometimes when you get into that, just trying to make sure that everyone is protected. That's the name of the game.
When you're looking for wild animals, when you're out, if you see like a raccoon out in the middle of the day, is that just something you need to automatically call animal control and say, this just doesn't look right to me? Are there some signs, definite signs you need to look for, or just better safe than sorry? What's the best thing to do?
Good question. If you've got a raccoon in the daytime, this time of the year, they're starting to have kittens. So as they start to have the kittens, raccoons will actually come out during the day. They're feeding. They're trying to produce more energy for their young, so they feed a little more often. They can be out early in the mornings, or early in the afternoons. I have even saw them out in the middle of the day. The thing about it is you only see them for a moment. They're passing through. They continue on. If they're aware of you, they continue to move on away from you. They're fleeing. If that animal stops, he's looking at you, he's lethargic, he's staggering around in the yard, those are definitely signs that you need to call someone, because this animal's not moving. All wild animals do move and flee from people.
All right. Diane, say, for example, like with the greenway situation, or you're just out in your yard and maybe you get scratched petting a stray cat or bit by a stray dog, or maybe it's a community dog. And as he said, it just kind of, it's been around, but you don't know about the shots or whatever. What are the first things that you need to do about cleaning that and then contacting the health department or your doctor? What are the steps you need to take?
Well, of course, anytime you've had contact with an animal like that, we recommend that you wash your hands. Because the thing about the rabies virus is, while it is a strong virus and it can kill you outside of the body, it's pretty wimpy. The way you're exposed to it is either through saliva from the animal or from brain tissue, spinal fluid, that type of thing. And most people's exposure is through saliva. But it will die in the saliva if it's within 30 minutes outside the animal or human's body. So, that's the thing about it. If you get it on your hands, you want to wash your hands as soon as possible so that you eliminate that contact. One of the things that we talk about, Angela, is in what we call an indirect exposure. And we get calls on this all the time, because someone will find a wild animal, like Junior's been talking about, in the fence, in the pen with its dog, and they'll be fighting. Well, your first instinct, is to check your pet to see if your pet's injured.
Right.
The wild animal may be taken out of the picture, but you want to check your pet for injuries. And what people do then, they'll be handling their dog. Well, my first question to them then is, okay, when you were handling and checking your dog, did you feel any moisture? Did you notice any moisture on the fur or anything like that? Because we're trying to determine, was it saliva from the raccoon, the skunk, whatever they were fighting with? And that's a hard question for somebody to recall,
right,
hours after the exposure, because it's like, well, I'm not sure. Was it blood? Was it saliva? So my recommendation is, I know you want to protect your pet. I know you want to check that pet and see if it's injured, but you really need to be wearing gloves, because the concern is if you get saliva from that rabid animal on your hands and you've got cuts or not what we call non-intact skin, places where your skin might be open.
Right.
That is a means for it, for the virus to enter your body. Or if you've got that saliva on your hands and then you have your hand up around your nose, your mouth, your eyes, that's another way for the virus to enter your body if the saliva is on your hands. So, you know, that's one of the things that I try to advocate to people. If you're checking your pet, you know, go in the house and grab a pair of gloves. It's not going to make that much difference as far as checking, you know, the time involved in checking out your animal. But, you know, failure to do that can mean you cannot rule out what we call an indirect exposure. And then the recommendation is you probably need to go get the rabies, you know, treatments to make sure that if you were exposed, you know, you're not putting yourself at risk.
Junior, I'm sitting here thinking that most of the times these things, because my dog has gotten to fights with coyotes and different things at night, it happens at night. So is there a number? Is there an emergency number to call the animal control at night to say, okay, this is what just happened. What do I need to do?
There is. If you call the animal shelter after hours, it will give you on that recording the number that you would call. We have it's 838-9111. The comm center communication actually would handle the calls and dispatch the animal control officer after hours. So that's something that goes on 365 days a year.
All right. So, like, if it happens at 12 o'clock at night or whatever, they would just call the 838-9111.
Yes. And if they, you know, if they don't remember that, if they'll just call our office at 336-903-7688, it will give them a recording after hours to tell them what they need to do and the number that they need to call.
All right. Again, we are talking with Junior Simmons with the Animal Control and with Diane Bogus with the Health Department. This is Focus on the Foothills talking about rabies. We'll be back with more after. Welcome back to Focus on the Foothills. My name is Angela. My guest today, Junior Simmons with Animal Control, Diane Bogus with the Health Department. And we're talking about rabies. And I know before we started the program today that Diane says, okay, at some point we've got to talk about bats. We have talked about domesticated animals and about wild animals and about indirect exposure and things you need to know about rabies, the virus. And if you even suspect that you have been exposed, you need to go ahead and contact your doctor or the health department and go ahead and get the vaccine, the rabies vaccines, or the immune...
The immune globulin.
Thank you. For the virus, because if you wait till you're showing symptoms, then it's too late. You could actually die, or you will die after the symptoms start, from rabies. So we've talked about that, and now we need to get into bats. So, okay, we're not talking about baseball bats or softball bats, I'm assuming here, Diane, right?
Right. We're talking about the furry flying ones.
Ooh, I don't like those.
Nobody else does either, apparently. And that's the issue, Angela. The thing about bats are a bat can bite you and you not know you've been bitten. The nature of their teeth, they do not leave tooth marks.
Oh, that's nice.
So you don't know that you've been bitten. And because people have a tendency to not like bats, if they find one in their house, the first thing they want to do is get it outside, get rid of it. And when we're talking about trying to determine if they may have had an exposure to rabies from that bat being in their house, because bats do carry rabies. And like I said earlier, you know, the two cases that come to mind right off of human deaths from rabies were tracked back to probable bat exposures. And, you know, one of the things that happen when people call me and say, I found a bat in my house, you know, what do I do? The first thing we're trying to determine is, could they have been exposed to the bat and have been bitten by the bat and not be aware of it? So we're looking at, you know, were you asleep? Did you wake up and find the bat in your house? Are there small children in the house that may have had the bat flying around them and they couldn't tell you that they were bitten? Or if the bat landed on them? Is there someone in the house who can't talk to you or was in a condition to where they couldn't talk at the time and don't know, you know, if the bat actually had contact with them? Mm. So that's the questions that we're looking for, because if that's a possibility, here again, you're looking at an exposure. And lots of times when I get the call from the person, you know, the first thing they have done is get the bat out of the house and release it. Well, if you've released it, you know, bats do not have clear markings like cats and dogs. You know, you can't tell if that was the bat that was in your house, even if you find a bat outside. So
right.
We're looking at bat's gone, can't test it. You may have had an exposure, you know. And that's an issue, you know, because people want to, you know, the thing you need to do is if you find it in your house, you need to try to capture it if you can in some shape, form, or fashion, and then contact animal control.
Oh, my word. You want me to leave that thing in my house until animal control gets there, Diane? Have you lost your mind?
Well, there are ways that you can safely capture them.
And safely capture the bat.
Safely capture them. And I'll let Junior take over from there.
Okay, Junior, I can't wait to hear about safely capturing a bat.
I feel like I've been set up here.
Let me explain to you what is going to happen if I find a bat in my house. I'm going to scream, run outside, lock the door, and then I'm going to call you.
Bless Danny's heart. That's her husband, for those that don't know. With a bat, you can take a bowl. You know, it's as simple as that. They actually don't fly around as much in the house as you would think for. So if he's hanging from a curtain or he's hanging from a wall, you can take a plastic bowl out of your house of some sort and take a little book or, you know, a little magazine. Put the bowl over the bat and slide the magazine up underneath it, and he just sort of slides off into that bowl. Now, I really don't know that I would recommend trying to catch him or remove him. I think that if he's hanging there and he's not bothering anything, that you do call us, you know, get on your cell phone, step outside, give us a call. The other problem is, you know, you need to sort of keep the bat in sight. People don't realize that a bat can go through a 5/8 inch of a hole. About anywhere that
5/8 inch of a hole?
Yes. About anywhere that a mouse can travel, this bat can go. So if you do lose sight of that bat and he's in your house, you may wind up 2 or 3 days later with, like Diane said, is this the same bat was in the house 3 days ago? Well, you know, we're not going to know for sure. So you're going to be evaluated. Do you need to go through the rabies prophylaxis?
You know, I am so glad I invited you two to the show today. you had just made my day.
We're a ray of sunshine, right?
Really? Wow.
You should be the one we're visiting at 2 o'clock in the morning. Those people really love us.
Yeah, I bet. Okay. All right, so things you need to know. You have got to get your pets vaccinated. You just have to. This is imperative for the safety of you, for your family members, for those around you, your neighbors. You have got to get your dogs and pets vaccinated. And a one-time vaccination doesn't do it. You start getting them vaccinated, you said, at 4 months.
Yes. And, you know, if I can iterate right here just a moment, your vaccine is so important. People don't realize sometimes you bring an animal into your house, it becomes part of your family. People love them. They nurture them different than we used to 20 years ago. That's all great. It's actually good that people care for their animals that much. Don't forget that vaccine, because if that bat is in your house and you have a cat, well, you know how cats like to play with toys. You know, they like to catch a moth. They like to catch things. So if you've got a bat in your house, and they can get in, believe me, and then you've got a cat there, you definitely, you know, we've got a lot of questions of, is your cat exposed to rabies? If it has a current vaccination, the same as the dog, you know, if it has a current vaccination, you can get that animal a booster within 5 days. You just continue to observe it for another 45 days. It can stay at your home. Everything is good. You know, you've protected your animal as you should, legally and by the law, and it can stay there. If that animal's vaccination has expired, that animal would have to go to our place or to a veterinarian of your choice in this county and be quarantined for 6 months at your expense, which is pretty expensive.
Ooh.
Yes. Runs about $1,500 to $1,700.
So definitely get your... And that brings up another thing. If you have a dog that's outside and you know that they have been exposed to something with rabies, they have their vaccination, but they're still going to need a booster shot, right?
Yes. They would get that booster within 5 days. If they have been exposed and the animal is there for testing, we would remove that animal and send it for testing to see if it was positive for rabies or not. If that animal has run off, say they've been in a fight with a raccoon or a coyote or something, and you do suspect anything that's wrong, if your animal is current, you're going to be evaluated by Diane as, you know, did I have secondary exposure? Did I handle my animal? What's going on there? But your pet would just get the booster and he could continue to stay at home.
All right. So, be careful if you're checking your dog. If you think they've been in a fight with something that's possibly rabid, put on gloves first. Be careful. Definitely get your pets vaccinated. Diane, if you suspect, even remotely suspect, that you have been exposed to rabies, they need to contact you immediately.
Call me at the health department. We'll try to, you know, go through the scene and try to help you remember, you know, to try to determine if you really do need to go get the post-exposure treatments. And one thing I'd like to add to, Angela, just on a why this is important to me personally, you know, Junior has talked about getting the animals vaccinated, and it breaks my heart where I have situations where we have a child who had a pet that was behind on its vaccinations and, you know, and then sustained a bite from that pet accidentally or whatever, you know, but there was a bite involved. And so now you've got, number one, the pet has to be taken away from the child, and then you're having to send this child in for treatments too, because, you know, the possibility is there.
Right.
I hate doing that to children, and that's why, you know, I cannot say enough what Junior has said about try to keep your animals vaccinated. It's just really important for everybody involved.
Absolutely. And if you're unsure as to how long it's been, call your vet and ask them when was the last time your dog or cat was vaccinated and if they're needing a new one. All right, guys, thank you so much. If folks have questions, can they call Animal Control or the Health Department about rabies, rabies shots, and that sort of thing?
Sure.
Yes, please, 336-903-7688 for the Animal Services.
And the Health Department is 336-651-7450, and tell them you need to talk to a nurse about rabies.
All right. Thank you, Junior Simmons with Animal Control and Diane Boggess with the Health Department. We appreciate it. This has been Focus on the Foothills. Coming up, we got a check on that weather forecast.
Thank you.